This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Our series, Climate Connections, with National Geographic, today takes us to a remote, treeless island in the Bering Sea. St. Lawrence Island, or in the Siberian Yupik, Sivukak. The Yupik came from Siberia and settled on the island more than 2,000 years ago.
We're only 38 miles from Siberia, almost 200 miles from the mainland of Alaska. Fortunately, we ended up on the U.S. side of the international dateline, and we're thankful for that, of course.
I meet 68-year-old Leonard Apangaluk in his house in the village of Gamble. Cooling on the kitchen counter are 10 glass jars filled with salmon he caught, preserved, and stored for the winter. Outside the houses, strips of walrus and seal meat hang on meat racks to dry. Gamble is one of just two towns on St. Lawrence Island, each about 700 people. The villages first got electricity and telephone service in the 1970s. Some homes still have no running water.
I was born in a little cubicle of a house, one room with two seal oil lamps and a tiny little window in one wall. And we used seal oil lamps to light inside the house and heat up the home. My mother sewed boots and pants and parkas for us. We were a very strong subsistence community. That's how I remember it to be when I was a very young boy. But times have changed now.
The people of St. Lawrence are still subsistence hunters. They hunt walrus, seals, and bowhead whales. They're given an annual quota for the whale catch. The whale hunters sail out in wood frame boats covered in walrus skin. When a whale is caught, the atmosphere in the village becomes electric with excitement. The school empties. Everyone gathers at the beach to help with butchering. The whale meat and blubber, or mungtuk, are divided among the villagers and frozen for food in the winter months. During hunting season, Leonard Apangaluk and the other men of the village will walk down to the beach several times a day to check on the weather and the ice to make sure it's safe to go out.
I spend so much time at the beach or make trips to the beach in a day that my wife would ask me when I come back that if the beach is still there.
Leonard Apangaluk pulls out a neat stack of bound volumes edged in gold, the meticulous daily weather journals he's kept for 20 years.
First day of sailing, no whale sighted, walrus on ice. Temperature minus 14 Celsius.
Leonard Apangaluk will tell you what everyone here knows, that ice is coming later in the year and retreating earlier. The ice is thinner, flimsy, he calls it, which makes it more dangerous for hunting. He says it's been 8 years since they've seen polar pack ice blowing in from the north, ice that builds up over many years. Studying ice is second nature to the people of St. Lawrence Island. There are 99 Yupik words for different kinds of ice in the dictionary that Christopher Kanuka helped put together. Wavy ice, shore-fast ice, small cakes of ice, thin ice, overlapped like shingles. All along the beach here are massive whale bones left behind after the butchering is done.
We call that Bering Sea out there our gardens because it provides us with sustenance. And we've been that kind of people ever since time immemorial. We grow up eating what we harvest from the sea.
Branson Tungian is the general manager for the village of Gamble.
The weather has been crazy these last 10 years that we're seeing. Unexpected warming in the middle of winter time, cooler temperatures in the springtime where it should be warm. The ice is getting thinner. Now we're seeing it come in what they call ice. Late December, January, and one time February. So we believe what the scientists are saying, that the ice is melting.
You said something just now. You said what they call ice.
Yes.
That's not the ice that you would consider real ice.
No.
Oh, look.
In the village of Savunga, 40 miles away, Perry Pungawi and his crew haul in their fishing nets. He holds up part of that day's catch, a gleaming silver fish called a Dolly Varden.
Dolly Varden, not Parton. If they were Dolly Partons, I'd be fishing all the time.
Perry Pungawi is captain of a whaling crew. He's also an ivory carver, selling carvings to the few visitors who might pass through. His wife Adeline is a teacher's aide with Head Start. Last year, she says, the ice didn't come until December.
That was so surprising. Usually, when I was growing up, we would start getting snow in August, end of August, September, and we know it's time to go back to school, and now it's just different. We won't get snow until December nowadays.
Subsistence hunters like Perry Pungawi rely on ice. It brings in walrus and seals.
It's like a big conveyor belt.
And less ice means more dangerous seas.
The ice is like our shelter from the swells. When there's swells in the water, the ice will usually calm the swells down, and that's our protection.
Are you having to go farther out to find walrus now?
Yeah, it's not uncommon to go out 40, 50 miles for walrus now.
This spring, Perry Pungawi and his crew caught 3 bowhead whales. That's pretty much unheard of, one boat taking in 3 whales in a month. And in the village of Gamble this spring, another surprise, crews caught 3 whales in one day. So climate change has by no means meant the end of whaling, but it does mean the whaling season is shorter. The weather changes fast, it's unpredictable and extreme. One whaler tells me, we have to zip out and zip right back. Bad storms come in quickly, without warning.
Here's the first grave here.
John Apangaluk has brought us to a cemetery on top of Sivukok Mountain that overlooks the village of Gamble. Fog settles in around the weather-beaten plywood coffins. The coffins are exposed, above ground, wedged in between gray boulders.
And here's he was a good whale hunter, walrus hunter.
Some old coffins have caved in on themselves. Many have rocks on top to weight down the lid. Some are white, freshly painted, like the one for Leonard Ray Nepakahock. The cross on his coffin says, young man, buckshot, bowhead whale rider. He was 11 years old when he died in 2005. It was a whaling accident. The boy was out with his uncle and 4 others in a walrus skin boat. They were towing in a 40-ton bowhead when the winds shifted. A storm came up fast.
And as they were coming home, they were having a tough time. You know, the swells were pretty big, and they couldn't take it anymore, and the boat capsized.
The crew radioed for help, but the seas were too rough. 4 of the crew drowned, including the mayor of Gamble, his 11-year-old daughter, Yolanda, and Leonard, his 11-year-old nephew. The stories behind the graves here tell of the many destructive forces tearing at this community. Not far from Leonard's casket, I find a new coffin covered with bright plastic flowers. Friends have left mementos, a penny, some pebbles, a necklace, on the cross that bears this name.
This girl was Destiny Lin Dudam Ungi. She was born 1990, August 9. She died June 2, 2007 in the morning. I was working at the store, and she committed suicide. She hung herself. I think she was drinking, and I heard people crying when I went outside. And there she was, hanging in the meat rack near her uncle's house.
She didn't make it to 17.
No, she was only 16 years old. Every year, or less than a year, we lose teenagers due to suicide.
The youth suicide rate on this island is said to be the highest in Alaska, and Alaska's rate is 3 times higher than the national average. Drugs, alcoholism, violence, these are immediate and constant crises.
I think we're on the verge of great success or great failure.
I talk with Merle Apasingok near the beach in Gamble, next to his whaling boat.
We're literally in between 2 lifestyles, and then we're in between two continents, in between two languages. We're literally the island in between.
Murula Passengok looks around and sees a generation of young people who can't speak Yupik, whose taste for chicken nuggets and pizza has replaced the taste for native foods. They have satellite TV and high-speed internet access, and pretty much all their town has to offer for entertainment are nightly bingo games. But Murula Passengok keeps coming back to this, a timeless connection between his people and the sea.
That space between the whale and me is a time-honored space. I don't know if any one whaler can express accurately what goes on in the mind. But for me, it's very, very deep. Because we dream about these whales. When you dream about something like that, there's a very deep connection. I dream about whales when they're here on ground.
What do you mean?
I've dreamt them swimming, and they'll go under the ground, and then they'll come up again, they'll surface again, here on land. Very, very powerful.
Yeah. What do you think that means?
I think that connection, that deep connection with the animal. You know, it's not just nutrition. It's not just ceremonial. It's not just religious. That's how, you know, God made us. God created us. God picked us. Handpicked us for this region, this spot right here.
This spot, surrounded by the sea, is changing in ways large and small. Remember Leonard Apangaluk, the man who's kept those daily handwritten weather logs for 20 years? Well, he's put down his pen. This summer, he got a computer.
We're more and more melting into the new lifestyle, and I think one day we probably won't hunt anymore. My father philosophized or prostified one time that one day we're going to stand on the beach and see the whales go by and say, we used to hunt these animals at one time. That's inevitable and will be the situation hence. But we're not quite ready for that yet.
You think that's coming?
Eventually, I'm sure.
Our stories from Alaska were produced by Art Silverman. You can see photos from our trip to St. Lawrence Island and hear our earlier reports on climate change in Alaska at npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.